Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I hope you've had a good week. We're finally back from our travels. It was a lot of fun seeing a lot of you at different meetings and things, but it's also nice to be home. One of my sons is getting married this Saturday, so we're looking forward to that. Those watching on Rumble, please like and follow. That's a great blessing to us. Those that are subscribers, thank you so much for being supportive of what we do. I think it is making a difference, and we get so many emails from people that appreciate the things we're putting out, which encourages us, and I think it's valuable. So thank you. What we're talking about this week is the JFK assassination and why it matters today. A lot of people think, oh, it's 60 years ago, what does it matter? I think there's huge significance to really understanding what happened. And over the last several months, there's been a new movie and a new book put out that really dig into evidence that's really not been looked at before with some new technologies and things. And they prove what we've suspected all along, that we were told a lie. The Warren Commission was just a hoodwinking job to get the American people to move on and just keep being too busy to notice what they were doing. But the reason it's important to know that our government killed our president that was elected is so that we wake from our slumber and we don't then always give them the benefit of the doubt, whether it's a September 11th or Oklahoma City bombing or a Waco or whatever it might be. We don't go, oh, well, they wouldn't do something like that. 60 years ago, in front of hundreds of onlookers, they executed a president right there graphically. So everyone would know, if you mess with us, you're going to be finished real quickly. And as we'll look at this and see the progression, that was the moment, that was the coup d'etat, that the deep state, which is run by the CIA, completely took over our country and gained total and absolute control. And they've been in total and absolute control ever since. I'll talk about Reagan and Trump later. The two people that said, no, I don't think we're going to do that, and what got dealt to them. But anyway, I appreciate you joining me. I hope this will be a blessing. It's going to be some heavy stuff, and it's going to be a lot of details. I'm hoping I'll be able to put together all the stuff I studied this week or give you enough of it where you realize, wow, okay, we are in this new world, but we've been in it for 60 years. We were just naively thinking, no, come on, you know, the American government is better than any other government in the world, and which isn't true. It's no better than the Red Chinese government or the North Korean government or the Russian government. And that's what we have to really face. They're not doing the same slaughter at the same level because we are armed. In those other countries, the citizens are not armed, but they're the same people, the exact same people at the top that are dictating what happens day in and day out. That's who they are. And we need to acknowledge that so we don't ever get sucked into any narrative they push ever again, whether it's for health reasons or educational reasons or whatever it might be. Like, no, thank you. We're not interested in anything you have to say because we know that you are our number one enemy. This first clip is just a trailer to a new movie called What the Doctors Saw, and it's excellent. It's just interviewing all the doctors that were there to take care of JFK when he was shot in Parkland Hospital in Dallas, Texas. And anyway, here's a couple key nuggets in the trailer.
You replay that day in your mind, and it never goes away.
Something has happened. Something, I repeat, has happened in the motorcade.
There has been an attempt on the life of President Kennedy.
We heard Kennedy had been shot and was being brought to the emergency room at Parkland Hospital.
You think, my goodness, I'm about to take care of the president.
What happened in trauma room one never came out, never became public.
I was there, I remember it in detail. It's etched in my memory forever.
We got the EKG machine in, there was just a straight line.
Straight line.
Straight line.
We thought that there was an entrance wound in the neck.
The Parkland doctors were a serious problem for the U.S. government.
And an exit wound in the back of the head.
Because they provided evidence that there was a shooter somewhere in the front.
In all probability, there was more than one shooter.
Everything changed as soon as JFK's body left Parkland Hospital.
When I saw the autopsy pictures, it made me very suspicious.
Certain people in our government tampered with critical evidence to make sure the American people would not know the truth about who murdered the president. And that's about as bad as it gets.
Someone told me you must never, ever say that that was an entrance wound again if you know what's good for you.
The Parkland doctors are telling us the truth beyond any and all doubt.
They have not deviated from what they observed 60 years ago.
Will people feel that they have a better understanding of what actually happened? Absolutely.
A lot of key nuggets right there. The whole movie is worth watching. I'll try to post that. But here's 14 things I came up with that you need to know about. One is the government tampered with evidence. Clearly, there's no argument about that anymore. The book states it in detail. The movie states it in detail by the doctors that said, yes, the photos from the autopsy and stuff, those were not the way his body was at all moments after he was shot and brought to the hospital. Number two, the doctors were literally held at gunpoint in Parkland Hospital, those doctors, when the Secret Service said, we're going to take the body, and they said, no, you don't have authority to do that, because back then, an autopsy was always supposed to be performed in the county that the death happened, but they held guns to them, back then even, showing they knew what was going on. They had something to cover up. Any of these individually are enough to let you know, oh, they did do it. I didn't think they did, but now I know that they did, because you don't run, hide, cover, and everything when you're not guilty. So that's always a sign to me when I see just a couple of these, I know they did it then. I might not know all the details, how they pulled it off, but it doesn't matter. You're guilty, and so we know what to expect. Number three, they only allowed fraudulent evidence for the Warren Commission investigation. Only the photos, the x-rays that had been tampered with were the only ones they got to do the investigation. Here's a little clip right here, and it has some interesting things in it.
Who was behind all of this?
Certain people in our government tampered with critical evidence in order to make sure the American people would not know the truth about who murdered the president.
Documents are withheld by the FBI, the CIA.
Intelligence agencies did all the wrong things if they were looking for conspiracy.
A lot of people just decided to keep their mouth shut, including the Parkland doctors.
I didn't want to be a target for those who had killed our president. So I didn't tell anybody for over 30 years that I was present in Trauma Room 1.
Because so many people did die who had been involved in the assassination.
And he said, you must never, ever say that that was an entrance wound again if you know what's good for you.
What actually happened in Trauma Room 1 never came out, never became public.
I was there. I know what I saw.
I was there. I remember it in detail. It's etched in my memory forever.
Dr. Humes and Dr. Fink, they began to examine the head. And they found a wound. It was on the right side of the head. It was slightly above the ear and forward of the ear, just barely in the hairline. I thought he was shot from the front, because entrance wounds are small and exit wounds are large. And it was a small wound, and Dr. Fink made a comment that probably was from a bullet. That was the wound they were examining when Dr. Humes was called to talk with the individuals in the gallery.
It was just below his hairline, right up here. And the entry wound was about the size of a dime. It was clearly a wound of entrance, not of exit.
And he came back. And no time during the autopsy did they ever go back to this wound. It was not listed in the official autopsy.
They never made it into the official record. That bullet would have been removed during the surgery. I think the problem is that they're left with only two bullets to do all
of the damage to two men. The known wounds were a shot in the back and a shot in the head. And they're trying to account for those two wounds, plus Governor Connally's wounds, with two bullets. The only way to do that is to have one bullet strike both men. So an ambitious junior counselor, Arlen Specter, invents the single bullet theory to solve a shortage of evidence.
In the 1960s, Specter gained national attention for his work on the Warren Commission, investigating the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, as co-author of the single bullet theory, supporting the belief there was only one shooter involved.
He decides he wants a bullet that hit President Kennedy first to be the one that hit Governor Connally. And he twisted himself in knots trying to sell that story.
Well, the single bullet theory is sheer, absolute, unadulterated nonsense.
Without a single bullet theory to wound both men, there has to be at least one additional assassin. And the Warren Commission couldn't have that.
On September 24th, 1964, the commission presented its findings in the form of this report to the president.
We concluded that, in the absence of solid evidence, there was no second gunman.
It's so amazing to me as I look at these things, how the other side always rewards people that go along with their little conspiracies without ever saying anything and revealing anything. Arlen Specter, after that, with the magic bullet and all that foolishness, then 30 years as a United States Senator. Gerald Ford, being on the Warren Commission, and saying, oh yeah, everything we saw was exactly the way it was, when it's crystal clear to anyone that looks at even what they looked at, hey, there's big problems here. There had to be more than one shooter. There had to be more things going on. But how did he get rewarded? President of the United States. It's unbelievable to me. Number four, the most likely orchestrator of the conspiracy, Alan Dulles, who was the MK Ultra guy from the CIA, and had been fired by JFK 2 years before from the CIA, was put in charge of the investigation. That's all anyone should need to see. When you, the guy that's most likely to be accused of the murder, hey, we're gonna let you do the investigation. Okay, sounds great. Number five, government threatened doctors and journalists who questioned the narrative. And I said that briefly a second ago, but that's unbelievable. You're threatened. If you ever say you think this shot was from the front, you'll regret it. These people are rotten even 60 years ago. Number six, CIA starts the term conspiracy theory then and charges the media to label anyone who doesn't believe their narrative a conspiracy theorist. They're the ones that came up with that term right after the JFK assassination. They knew they had done it. They didn't want anybody saying that, so they started this whole campaign to discredit and label and character assassinate anyone who doesn't believe what the government tells them, because we know that the government is the most trusted institution that there is. Number seven, the Parkland doctors wrote down exactly what they saw at the time. They're writing it down. And it contradicts everything that the government wrote down later and said, here are the facts. Watch this clip here. It's pretty damning of their efforts to do what they did.
Dr. Earl Rose, who was the medical examiner at that time, had requested that the autopsy be done in Dallas County. I think it was his opinion that if a murder occurs in Dallas County, the autopsy is done in Dallas County.
Dr. Rose had been sitting in his office, which looked out onto a corridor that led to the exit, the loading dock at Parkland. And he saw this little procession coming along down the corridor, heading toward the exit. And that consisted of the president, who had now been placed in his coffin. And Mrs. Kennedy was walking along the left side of that cart. Two Secret Service men were heading up the little procession, one of whom was carrying a Thompson submachine gun. Well, when Dr. Rolls saw that, he stepped out of his office into the corridor, held his hand up to ask them to stop, because he said, I'm required by law to tell you that any murder that's committed in the state of Texas, the victim must undergo a postmortem exam in this state.
And they have a loud conversation, and I hear them saying, we're doing the autopsy here. This is the state of Texas. The law is that he has the autopsy. And the Secret Service says, no way. We're taking him away.
Then the Secret Service man with the submachine gun walked slowly over to Dr. Rose and put his hands underneath his armpits and gently lifted him up off the floor and placed him over against the wall of the corridor, and then shook his finger in his face as if to say, stand out of our way. And then they turned around and headed out the rear entrance to the ambulance.
Once that body was placed on the airplane at Love Field, everything changed, and the federal government controlled the narrative that was given to the American people about what had happened. By the time JFK's body arrives at Bethesda, the narrative is clearly that the president was shot by a lone gunman from above and behind. And so the body needs to support that narrative, and one way to support it is to remove all of the metal in the body that indicates there was a crossfire. You're going to sanitize the crime scene, in effect.
24-year-old Lee Harvey Oswald, charged with the murder of the president.
Oswald was arrested less than 2 hours after the president was shot. Police say Oswald worked in the building from which the shots that killed the president were fired. That gun is a powerful military rifle, which police found in the building.
He has not confessed. He has made no statement. Charges of murder have been accepted against him.
I don't know what this is all about. I'm just a patsy.
President.
Investigation and arrest has been rapid, to say the least.
Number 8. All film, pictures, everything that were taken by individuals there that day were confiscated by the FBI, CIA, and Secret Service. They didn't want any conflicting evidence to their made-up story. So we're taking the cameras, we're taking the film, getting it, so there's no way someone will have a picture proving what we said is a lie. Pretty amazing. Number 9. This is how they do things today, too. Immediately, you know, they'll tell you, oh, here's what happened. When something just happened. Like, how would you know what happened? You didn't have time to investigate or anything. But number 9, 2 days later, so on November 24th, 1963, 2 days after the assassination, it was stated in headlines all over America, Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. It wasn't a conspiracy, and the case is closed. That's like September 11th or all the other ones when they're immediately, no, do we know exactly what happened? That's it. There's no, isn't it going to take weeks or even months to gather every clue and every eyewitness and every, no, we already know because we did it. So we don't need, there's nothing we don't know is the bottom line. Here's what's amazing. So that's on the 24th of November, 1963. The next day on the 25th, Lee Harvey Oswald is killed by Jack Ruby, and JFK is buried. Get this thing over with, done, cry everybody, okay, let's move on. Nothing to see here. It's pretty amazing. Lee Harvey Oswald was a patsy. He had worked with the CIA. We know that in the CIA files now that have been declassified, we see he was one of their assets. They set him up, and then they killed him to silence him, because you could tell even in the interview there that they did of him, the few moments they had him before he was killed, he didn't even know the president had been killed. He was like shocked. You can tell the look on his face like, what? I mean, charged with killing the president? What are you talking about? You could tell he didn't have a clue about that. Number 10, this is so key to me. So key. Once you see the CIA has its talons into everything, especially back then, When the CIA started, they started to gobble up everything, all the influence in America. We know that from the Church Committee hearings in the 70s that said, yeah, we have reporters at every news network in America. Yeah, we have paid informants, but we can't really talk about that. I think ABC, NBC, and CBS were all started and instigated and controlled by the CIA. It was just three more three-letter agencies. But here's proof of that. Dallas is a big city, even back then, and it had an ABC station, NBC, and CBS. And on that day, when President Kennedy, who was like a rock star, came to Dallas on that whole tour, thousands of people along the roadways and stuff, they didn't send any cameramen down to record that. I mean, think about that. A big event like that in your city, the president coming, but it wasn't just any president. He was loved by the American people. And now it's not worth covering. Don't send any cameras down there. They were told, don't send any cameras down there because you might catch something on the film that exposes what we're doing. It's crazy. The only few things we have is a few people had a movie camera or regular camera with them. That's all we have. And back then that was very uncommon. Film was expensive, movie cameras were expensive, and the film, and that's the only record we have. And of course, all that was confiscated until years later. So it's just, I mean, that to me, individual ones like that, I go, boom, they did it. There's no way they would have done that. There's no film footage of the president's visit when thousands of people are there in a major city. Number 11, a complete description of Lee Harvey Oswald and the bullet, the 30 caliber gun, and everything that he had was released over the airways in Dallas minutes after the shooting, when no one had seen Lee Harvey Oswald, no one knew the gun, they hadn't found the gun yet or anything, and all the details were released. It shows they knew who they had hired to go up there and make some racket while they shot him from some other places to kill him. Anyway, I just like, that's, why wasn't that question back then? How in the world, who gave you the description of the guy when we don't have a clue who he is? The gun, the bullets, when we haven't captured the gun yet, we haven't captured him yet, we don't know anything. It's really rotten. But what do you expect? Number 12, the committee didn't follow any leads from eyewitnesses. They just kept the narrative from 15 minutes after the killing to the end. Supposed to have a big congressional thing. Nothing was changed. Nothing hardly was looked into. They didn't even interview so many of the eyewitnesses that said, we saw a shot from over here. We did this and all these conflicting things. Like, nope, it was a sole gunman. He shot three shots. Only two of them hit, and the magic bullet went through JFK down, over, bounced off the floor of the thing, came up through the governor in front of him. I don't think so. Oh, another one I love that's not very well known, but there was an anonymous call that said Lee Harvey Oswald was in the theater where then they caught him. He's in there, and oh yeah, anonymous call. Brother, like we're supposed to believe that. Just total nonsense. Then another key one I didn't know before, but as I was studying this week, the Dallas police did a paraffin test. And what that is, it's a test where they can tell if you've shot a gun lately at all, because somehow from the explosion of the bullet, the gunpowder, it gets on you and they can tell absolutely, yes, you've shot a gun, what type of gun, everything just from that. And they did a test on Lee Harvey Oswald and said, has he shot a rifle today? And they said, no, he has not. Absolutely has not. I mean, that's the Dallas police, but be quiet. And if you say anything, we're coming after you. So anyway, stuff that just keeps going. There's far more details in the film and in the book. And if you're interested, dig in and read them. There's just tons of key details. But the key takeaway is this: why did they mess with the evidence, tamper with the body, threaten eyewitnesses, confiscate anything that might contradict them of proof of that day, what happened? It's because they did it. I mean, it's so crystal clear, it's not even funny. Now, that's some of the details from that movie. And then the book is by Jerome Corsi, who is a very respected writer, and he called the book The Final Analysis. And watch this clip here. It's a guy he worked with who is a doctor, and he specialized in studying this with Jerome Corsi. But watch this clip.
Well, the Warren Commission based its entire analysis on two faulty pieces of forensic evidence. One was the autopsy photograph of the back of JFK's head, which shows that there was no large hole there, in direct contradiction to what virtually all the eyewitnesses said. The second piece of fraudulent evidence was the frontal X-ray of JFK's skull, which shows what appears to be a cross-section of a 6.5 millimeter bullet fragment inside his right eye socket. Those were the two foundation stones on which they built their forensic case, and both items are fraudulent.
That was that clip that validated. The only things they did use were the X-rays. They could tell now by analyzing the real X-rays, oh, these ones were all tampered with ahead of time. The conspiracy wanted to just blame Oswald because it's simple. And then he's dead too. You know, 2 days later, it's all over. He's dead, the guy who did it, and we can move on. You don't need to look at this. I mean, that's the whole key. But the radiologist added a bullet from Oswald's type of gun to the X-rays. Just a lie, like it's sitting still in the head there, which is so stupid. It fell out, it wasn't embedded in bone or something, which it wouldn't have been anyway. A high-powered rifle is going through. But it's just, I don't know, just so rotten when you see this stuff. It's all coordinated, it's all planned. Here's another clip that talks about how specific they can now tell from the X-rays what really happened is.
JFK assassination was a coup d'etat. And this book is definitive in that I worked with David Mantic, who is both a PhD in physics and an MD. He's a radiation oncologist. He's been practicing for over 40 years. He's seen the JFK skull X-rays from the autopsy. There's three of them, more than anyone else. And he studied them with optical density measurements, which is a scientific instrument that you bring into the archives, and it shoots a beam of light through a hole. You have an arm, it comes down, you measure the light coming through the X-ray, and it gives you a very, very scientific measure of what you're looking at. Now, the conclusions of Dr. Mantic's research, bottom line is that all three of these X-rays are not the originals. They have all been altered. They're all forged to mask evidence of frontal shots. And the X-rays shown the optical density measurements, clear evidence of two frontal shots and one from behind. And this corresponds with the evidence that was seen at Parkland Hospital.
So it's now crystal clear that there were three shooters because there's bullets coming from three different angles, which shows, obviously, it was a conspiracy, which was obvious at the time, too, to people that were alive back then, but they just didn't know where to go because there was only three news stations in the country. And they happened to be dictated what news they could talk about by the CIA and our government. So it was, everyone was just in the dark. Every story sounds true till you hear the other side. Well, back then they had a complete monopoly. And so that's how they could cover things like that. People finally said, I guess we'll just go on. But people knew they were lied to. That's why so many different conspiracy theories came out about it, because they realized there's too many things you've said that aren't consistent with things you've said before or after. It's contradicting the narrative. And so people start digging in and coming up with a lot of different things. But these two sources, this movie and this book, are some of the best there that really show and prove it was what we thought it was. Watch this clip now. I came across this week. This is Jack Ruby. Okay, he's the one then that came that third day and just killed Lee Harvey Oswald right in the police station. Like, there's no security on the most wanted man in the world that supposedly just killed the president, and you let a guy come in and do that. But he's talking in his own words, I'd never seen this before, about the powerful men that set him up and why you will never find out what happened, because they're just too powerful.
Oswald was gunned down by local nightclub owner Jack Rubenstein, also known as Jack Ruby.
There is Leon. He's been shot.
Shot rang up.
Jack Ruby was from Chicago and had extensive ties to the Chicago mob. Oswald died, and the world never heard his side of the story.
These people have given me a hearing without legal representation or anything. I didn't shoot anybody, no, sir. I'm just a part of it.
Ruby would die of cancer in jail just a few years later, never revealing his story either.
The world will never know the true facts of what occurred, my motives. I'm the only person in the background that knows the truth pertaining to everything relating to my circumstances.
Do you think it'll ever come out?
No, because unfortunately, the people that have so much to gain and have such a material motive for putting me in a position I'm in will never let the true facts come of their voice to the world.
Now, these people are in very high positions, Jack.
Yes.
That's pretty amazing, isn't it? I was like, wow. There's so much stuff out there that just doesn't get the airplay because it doesn't go along with the narrative, so you don't know about it. But thankfully, with the internet and with people digitizing information where it's becoming more and more available, stuff that used to be obscure or you'd have to go find the newspaper in the city where it was and stuff, we're starting to be able to pull pieces together on so many different things and see, yeah, they've lied to us. This next one is the one years ago I saw this clip, and right then I knew, okay, they knew about it, which means our government knew he was getting ready to be killed because of this clip right here. You see this Secret Service agent that is assigned to John F. Kennedy's car and is supposed to be standing right next to him or behind him. He gets called off and he's fuming mad, like, what are you doing? I'm supposed to watch the president. Just seconds before the president gets shot in the head, they're just turning the corner in the limousine and they call him off. So that guy who called him off obviously knew what was going on, or the guy over him that said, hey, call him off the president's duty right now, off his watch. And anyway, watch this clip.
There is a film taken that day at Daley Plaza where it appears that the Secret Service agents who were there to protect JFK and the other occupants of the limousine, seemingly being told to stay back from the car by their superiors. Was it possible that the Secret Service was also involved in a conspiracy to have the president shot?
Did you see that? How he was just like, what are you doing? My duty is to watch the president. And he was just so fuming. I couldn't find one. There's a longer clip than that that even is back from a farther distance. And you can just see him really get mad. But then seconds later, bam, bam, you know, so obvious. Here's a clip that's a few minutes long. Jerome Corsi talking to Steve Bannon about the book. But listen to this. He says so many details, it's easier for me to play this and try to repeat them all. But listen to this. It just, again, fills in so many pieces of the puzzle where you can see crystal clear what really happened November 22nd, 1963.
This is clear evidence of a frontal shot that entered at the forehead and went across the right quadrant of the head, and it did not exit. You see the skull at the back? There's no exit wound. So that's undoubtable. That's clear evidence, scientific evidence. The red blob marks where there's a patch of what looks like mercury. Probably this was a mercury bullet that entered right in the forehead and could not be removed in the pre-autopsy surgery that was done at Bethesda before the autopsy started to alter the wounds. So the record is ironclad. And anyone, it takes a lot of effort to go through all this, but it is all there.
You're saying you've taken this from all the different documents that are out there, correct?
That's correct. It's very thoroughly evidenced in government documents, sworn testimony. Douglas Horn, who did the five volumes on the assassination, medical records, worked with us. He wrote a preface to the book. He's fully authenticated everything we've said in the book. Dr. Mandick has done optical density measurements. Those are science. Everything in here has been validated. Dr. Michael Chesser also independently did the same type of optical density measurements on the JFK skull x-rays, and he concluded that Dr. Mandick was right. Everything in here is double-checked, fully vetted, and you've got photographs and footnotes that prove it all. And it's fully illustrated, so you can see everything we're talking about.
I listened to several of his interviews on different stations and things, and there were so many key details. If you are interested in this issue, that book would be a great one to get. But as I was watching so many different films and documentaries and things, trying to gather pieces of the puzzle, a couple interesting things I noticed. One is Donald Rumsfeld, who was just a young man at the time. I saw him in Dallas in one of the pictures and things, which I was like, wait a minute. And I could tell it was him 100%, but that was really interesting to me. Of course, George H.W. Bush, who was in the CIA, when he was on Oprah back in the 80s, she asked him, where were you on the day John F. Kennedy got shot? And he said, I don't remember, which I knew he was lying right then. So I thought, and back then I didn't know he'd been in the CIA. I didn't know any of that stuff. But I remember going, you wouldn't remember that? Of course you would. It's like September 11th. Anyone living at that time, especially if you were 20, 30, 40 years old, knows exactly where you were. And you'll never forget it as long as you live. But he said, I don't know. Some researcher dug in and found there was a CIA agent in Dallas named George Bush on the day of the assassination. He was confronted with that once, then I saw on a video, and he said, oh, it must have been another George Bush. Oh, okay. Like we're supposed to believe that there's two George Bushes in the CIA at the same time. I doubt it. But the reason that's significant, and here's my theory, this is just a conspiracy theory, but I have watched my whole life how when somebody like a Merrick Garland covers up the Oklahoma City bombing by the FBI, then he, as the Attorney General of the United States 30 years later, they always reward their own. Gerald Ford, you're going to go along with this little Warren Commission, the lies, the obvious lies. Oh, you'll be president one day. They just do that. And my only thinking in how George H.W. Bush, someone of that low intelligence level, he's like a dead fish. He's so unattractive to listen to talking. He's so stale. I don't know how else to say. I'm not trying to be rude. I thought, how did he become president? And then I thought, wait a minute, who's the one that picked him for vice president? The Rockefeller family, they made Reagan pick him, and there's a video you can watch when he had a meeting with the Rockefellers and then came out to say, oh, my vice presidential running mate is going to be George H.W. Bush, who he hated. He hated him because he knew he was part of these secret societies and everything. But why did he get picked for that when he's such a dullard? And I think he had something to do with the assassination. That's a conspiracy theory. I don't have proof of that, except watching things for 50 years and how it all works. And I go, that's the only way a dullard like that would go up in anything at all, because he's willing to do anything for power and control. And then once you've done that for them, you kind of are holding them account too. You can say, hey, I can tell them that. So it gives you leverage and power in the system. But again, I don't know that as a fact. That's my little theory. The reason I think that too is then, you know, MK Ultra, Alan Dulles, who's put in charge of the Warren Commission, is the one that started and got going the MK Ultra program, where they're programming people to do what they want them to do. And as I studied that, I came across some people that were in MK Ultra that I'd never heard of before. Maybe you have. One of them was a guy named Charles Manson. He was in the MK Ultra program. The guy with Helter Skelter and the killing the people and stuff. I'm like, crazy. Also, Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, was part of the MK Ultra program. Those are just a few of the ones we know for sure. And there's been thousands that they've done those things on. I think John Hinckley Jr. was an MK Ultra product, because George H.W. Bush had the connections to the CIA. Obviously, he'd been the head of the CIA. And the Hinckley family, unlike what you were told and I was told, they weren't just some nutty family. They were very good friends with the Bush family. So it wasn't like some, we were told, oh, he's some nutcase that loves Jodie Foster and all this stuff. But then later I found a news clip saying the night of the shooting, the Bushes and the Hinckleys were supposed to have dinner together and they had to cancel it. And that was never heard again from anyone. I'm like, wait a minute here. So Reagan, back to what I was talking about at the beginning, since the coup d'etat in 63, the CIA has been in complete control of America through the deep state and all the intelligence agencies that just dictate to the world what to do. And there's only been two people that have come along. One of them was Reagan, who was like, no, no, we're doing what's best for America. And what happened a couple months after he's in office? You get a John Hinckley trying to kill him. Well, I started researching that too. He had exploding bullets in his gun, the 22 bullets. Where's some nutbag getting that? From the CIA, I bet. And then also, many reports that he kept waiting at a phone booth for days ahead of time outside of a Denny's there to get orders from somebody. So again, it was totally a conspiracy. It wasn't some just lone guy that, I love Jodie Foster, I'm going to kill the president so I can, she'll marry me or whatever, like they told us. It was none of that. The Hinckleys were a wealthy family that were best buddies with the Bush family. So anyway, that's key things that intertwine with this. And then the only other guy, our whole life since 63, everything has been marching against America, what's best for the globalists, what's best for the setting up a world government, what's best for totalitarian control worldwide. Except when Reagan tried to change things, they tried to take him out, and God spared his life. And then they realized, okay, we better not try another attempt and we might get exposed here. So let him kind of do some stuff, but we'll make sure the Democrats have a majority in the House and the Senate, so he's not going to be able to do much. He's gone, and then a guy named Trump comes, and they're like, this guy will never be elected. They underestimated him like they did Reagan. He was so good at communicating to the American people, and he gets in there. And the day he gets elected, the next day, the Russian collusion story comes out and the hoax, and we've all seen, whether you like him or not, you've seen he has been attacked from every way, shape, and form, every weapon available to them except execution since that day. I mean, it's been years now, 7-8 years, just under constant attack, even though he's a billionaire. Pretty amazing. Well, again, it's something that I could go more into detail about, but I just wanted to cover it enough and tell you why it's significant. It's significant because those are the same people running America today. So we'll never be on the right side of anything as long as they're in power. We'll never be pushing a narrative that is truthful and that is helpful to the American people or anyone else in the world. It's about money, power, and control and nothing else. This last clip before I close up, I'm just going to play because it's one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen. I came across it while I was researching this week, and I thought, this is a key piece of the puzzle somehow. I don't even know how, but it so disturbed me listening to it. This is Jackie Kennedy, okay, JFK's wife, 10 days after he is brutally murdered on her lap in Dallas, talking to LBJ. This is a recording from the White House, a phone call. 10 days after her husband was brutally murdered, listen to this and I'll close things up.
Mr. President?
I just wanted you to know you were loved and by so many and so much.
Oh, Mr.
I'm
President.
One of them.
I tried. I didn't dare bother you again, but I got Kenny O'Donnell over here to give you a message. If he ever saw you, did he give it to you yet?
No.
About my letter that was waiting for me last night?
Listen, sweetie, now, the first thing you got to learn, you got some things to learn, and one of them is that you don't bother me. You give me strength.
But I wasn't going to send you in one more letter, and I was
don't
just scared
you'd
answer.
Don't send me anything. You just come over and put your arm around me. That's all you do. When you haven't got anything else to do, let's take a walk. Let's walk around the backyard and just let me tell you how much you mean to all of us and how we can carry on if you give us a little strength.
But you know what I wanted to say to you about that letter? I know how rare a letter is in a president's handwriting. Do you know that I've got more in your handwriting than I do in Jack's now?
Oh, well.
And for you to write it at this time and then to send me that thing today of, you know, your tape announcement and everything.
I want you to just know this, that I told my mama a long time ago when everybody else gave up about my election in 48.
Yeah.
My mother and my wife and my sisters and you females got a lot of courage that we men don't have. And so we have to rely on you and depend on you, and you got something to do. You got the president relying on you, and this is not the first thing you had. So there are not many women, you know, run around with a good many presidents. So you just bear that in mind. You got the biggest job of your life.
He ran around with two presidents. That's what they'll say about me. Okay, anytime.
Goodbye, bye.
Thank you for calling, Mr. President.
Bye,
goodbye.
Sweetie. Do come back.
I will.
Is that the most bizarre thing you've ever heard in your life? Giggling? Laughing? I mean, being totally inappropriate, and I bet you she did go over to his office or whatever. I'm just shocked by that. It shows, again, this upper class, this elite class, these globalists are just wicked people to the core. They're not faithful in their marriage. They're not faithful to our country. They're not faithful to the oath of office of the Constitution. They're not faithful to anything. They're a bunch of sleazy slime balls like Epstein, and that's who's running things. So, we need to pray for our country. We need to stand, speak, and share the truth to dispel the darkness of their lies. And then we need to remember this verse, Proverbs 15:3. This is how I know they're not getting away with anything. Oh, they thought they did, many of those people, but they have stood before their maker and realized they didn't. Listen to this. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good. I love that verse. Yeah, if you're doing wrong, he's watching, and we should be sobered by that. He's the ultimate accountability partner. If you're looking at something you shouldn't be looking at, he's right there with you. Don't think you're doing anything in secret. You never can do anything in secret because there is a God. But the reverse of it is wonderful too. He's beholding the evil and the good. When you do something kind, loving, selfless, just do the right thing because it's the right thing. When no one saw you, he saw you, and he cares, and he loves you, and he is so thankful when we do it that way. So I want to encourage you with that this week. They'll all get what's coming. We need to have our eyes open so we're not deceived by the narratives, by the lies, by the deceit from the father of lies. But we need to then just keep speaking, standing, and sharing for the truth, and then pray, God, have mercy on us, and please bless our efforts. Hope this wasn't too much. I appreciate you all very much. And until next week, God bless you.
Welcome to Agenda Weekly. We invite you to join us for an overview of the news from a conservative Christian perspective. You may be familiar with a weekly video podcast from Curtis Bowers, but Agenda Weekly is much more than that. Every Friday, we provide a written summary of the most important news events from America and around the world. We don't just cover the bad news. We find the often overlooked encouraging stories, because we all need some good news. Additional resources include informative videos and articles to dig deeper, a featured hymn of the week, essential prayer points, and specific actions to take personally and in your community. For only $5 a month, less than a cup of coffee, you can subscribe to receive the most comprehensive news source available. Our goal is to save you time, expose the agenda behind the news, and equip you to make an impact right where you are. Subscribe today at agendaweekly.com.